But we sing the song in the context of our life, of everyday living, in the world that we have to face every day we wake up, and each of our day live with that faith in the world that seemed very opposite, going opposite direction, talking to us in a different ways. And maybe we're confused, or maybe we're not, but there are times that we have to understand the world we live in and how to apply the unshakable faith promise that God has given to us. In this context, it's almost an antithesis as we witness the faith today and the baptism today, and then look into the world and look at our tomorrow as we enter the world, wherever we are, in our school, in our work, in our career, in our relationship, families, and all. We are facing a world that demands us to live true to the fundamental value of our faith, to really understand what is at stake and to make the right decision. So with that in the series that we're talking about, duties of godly children, it's not so much a children to parents, but as we grow up, as we mature in life, what are we receiving and what are we passing on? I think that's the connection here. We want to look into the life that we have and be able to live for God in the way that is done properly for His name. So I invite you to turn to Ecclesiastes. It's a strange book in the Old Testament. If you don't know where that is, the index will help you. But just turn to chapter 12. And it's talking directly to young people, even though it applies to each and every one of us. And it is in that connection that we want to see today, that as growing up or grown up or maturing people in life and in faith, what are we to do? How do we make decisions? And this is give us a perspective of how to conduct our life with a value system consistent with the faith that we just proclaimed. Ecclesiastes chapter 12. Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw near when you will say, I have no delight in them. Before the sun and the light and the moon and the star were darkened, and clouds returned after the rain. In the day that the watchmen of the house tremble and mighty men stoop, the grinding ones stand idle because they are few, and those who look through the windows grow dim. And the doors of the street are shut as the sound of the grinding mill is low, and one will arise at the sound of the bird, and all the daughters of song will sing softly. Furthermore, men are afraid of high place and terrors on the road. The almond tree blossoms, the grasshopper drags himself along, and the copperberry is ineffective. For man goes to his eternal home, while mourners go about in the street. Remember him before the silver cord is broken, and the golden bowl is crushed, the pitcher by the well is shattered, and the wheel at the cistern is crushed. When the dust will return to earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. Vanity of vanities, said the preacher, all is vanity. In addition to being a wise man, the preacher also taught the people knowledge, and he pondered, searched out, and arranged many proverbs. The preacher sought to find the delightful words to write the words of truth correctly. The words of wise men are like goats, and master of these collections are like well-driven nails. They are given by one shepherd. But beyond this, my son, be warned. The writing of many books is endless, and excessive devotion to books is wearing to the body. The conclusion, when all has been heard, is, fear God and keep His commandments, because this applies to every person. For God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or evil. Well, Lord, it is a unfamiliar text to many of us, but it is the truth that you want to convey and want us to ponder and apply into our lives. Open our minds and our hearts so that we can see, and help us, Lord, to walk in obedience. We thank you. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, we come to this text and the conclusion we just read, that in conclusion, when everything has been heard, when all is said and done, what is it that we have to understand? What is it that we have to capture so that we can make decisions in our life that is honoring to God and proper and consistent with our faith? And it's directed to all, but primarily for a young audience like we are today. So let me just nail down the 3 points that we want to make today from the text. It sounds maybe from the outfield a little bit, but as you bring it together, it is very applicable to each and every life that we face today. So to live true to the fundamental values of faith, we need to understand in life. And the first point is that we need to remember the futility of life. We need to remember the futility of life. And second, we need to remember the blessings in the present. The blessings in the present. And number three, we remember the future judgment of God. Remember the future judgment of God. And in the flow of things, so I'll just talk more about the first two points, and the third point will be very apparent, and it will speak for itself when we get to it. When we understand one, we understand the other in the first two points as well. They're all connected, and then we'll come to conclusion point three. But it's talking about values of life, value system of life. We're talking about what life is all about. Why do we live? What do we live for? How do we measure the life? So we discover ourselves in great need of this kind of understanding, because it's one thing to proclaim faith, it's the other one to live faith out in reality. So we need the value transformation in our life. We need the biblical perspective and spiritual discernment what life is all about, how to measure the meaning and the purpose of our existence. So, you know, we may receive teaching from the church, from parents. We have received a lot of things, but now this text is requiring us to sit down and think it through, even, you know, into the future, so that we live today properly before the Lord. So Ecclesiastes is a book written by Solomon, and in a way it is a very fascinating book. Kind of hard to read, confusing at times. Have you ever read Ecclesiastes? Give it a try. It's mind-boggling, but it's also mind-opening in a way. Solomon's reputation for possessing extraordinary wisdom is just fit the Ecclesiastes profile here. The Bible recognized Solomon is the wisest man, and he received wise and understanding heart from the Lord. And so he composed songs and proverbs. You know, he's well known for not only being a rich man, powerful king, but also a man of wisdom that come from the Lord. So the book speaks authoritatively on the subject of life. And as we listen here, is the conclusion chapter of the whole book. We will double back and look at some of the discussion that he had in the book. But the bottom line, the principle of life, of understanding, is this. Life as we know it, as we live it, is futile, is totally vanity if it is lived for its own sake. So he goes through all the experiences of life, and he said, life as we know it and as we live it is totally futile, is totally vain if lived for its own sake. Meaning, if we just live life as it is, as here and now, we are into total vanity. And so that's how he come to the conclusion, and that's what we need to present to us, because we basically don't believe it that way. You know, we believe there's goodness in life, there's things to pursue. You know, God will add to that, God will help with that, but life is worth a living. Contrary to that, the Bible speaking here, saying that it is not. It's totally the very opposite. So start out in verse 1. Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw near, when you will say, I have no delight in them. So the first principle, like I said, is strange. Remember the futility of life. And it is cast as the fundamental understanding of value formation. If we don't understand this, then we really have a wrong understanding of whole Christianity, the whole salvation need, and bring in question of our whole repentance as well. So it is a lot deeper than it sounds. So the idea here, a strong message, is that life at the human level, in the confines of human existence, is futile. Mere human effort and achievement are vanity, empty, and worthless. And this is a very extremely unpopular message in our time and in our culture and even in our church. The youthful culture of possibilities, of positive thinking, the movement of possibility of faith. And so even in the home, we don't teach this. It is unpopular in the home where parents are teaching children to take life seriously, to get ready to face the world. You know, they say the life you have is ahead of you. You have the future. Try hard. Nobody say, you know, it doesn't matter how hard you try, how successful you may become, is ultimately a big fat zero. You know, we don't tell our children that, and we don't go out to the world thinking like that. But it is so. It is all futile. It is vapor in the wind. And it is something that we must strive hard to really grasp hold of and take it to our own life. What Solomon is doing in the book is that he is looking at life at the level of human existence, as life as everybody knows it. We can call it life at the horizontal, live life in the horizontal, meaning just on the human level. And then once in a while, he will look up in the vertical and say, you know, here's the contrast. But he spent a lot of time in the horizontal so that we believe what he is saying. Because most people, like I said, including Christians, live life in the horizontal, define life in the horizontal, measure life in the horizontal, but do not believe that it is futile. The Bible said, life in the horizontal, in the human level of existence, means nothing, goes nowhere, is all totally vanity. And so if we are honest, we can look into our lives. In a lot of things we do, it just connect in this horizontal level only. Even in family, in Christian home, even in church, in things, if we're not careful, we will see that a lot of our activities are confined in this area. And so we must break out of that with an understanding where we will see that in the second point. So he's talking about evil days come. He talked about the days of trouble. He said that remember your Creator in the days of your youth before the evil days come. Meaning in the future, it will be evil days. We'll come back to the phrase, remember your Creator in the days of your youth. But we want to look at the evil days and the years that draw near when we say, you know, we have nothing to live for. The book is called for a future that's very bleak. An inevitable evil that will come to all men and women alike. Something is very simple, but it wraps up in the essence of the futility of life. It is the inescapable destination of human life. You know, he's talking about something very simple. He used very poetic, very romantic language to describe this evil. It's called OH. It's called the aging process that will befall everybody, and it will get to everyone unless the greater evils get them first, get us first, and that is death. So, you know, as young people, we don't think and act like this, and even older people, we don't have this picture in our mind. If you remember a famous song called Fame, Title Fame, talking about the youth and their dreams, and the song opened with this statement, you know, baby, look at me and tell me what you see. You ain't seen the best of me yet. Give me time and I'll make you forget the rest. I can cast the moon in my hands, don't you know who I am? And then it declared with a very powerful chorus, you know, you can sing along if you want. I'm gonna live forever. I'm going to learn how to fly. I feel it's coming together. People will see me and cry. I'm going to make it to heaven, light up the sky like a flame. I'm going to live forever, baby, remember my name. And then at the end, it concludes, people will remember my name. Well, Ecclesiastes is going to say, and he's saying this, baby, he's looking at you, kid, and I got news for you. You ain't going to live forever. You ain't going to fly. Things are not coming together for you, and people will see you and cry. But not for the reason that you think. Maybe they ain't gonna remember your name. So that perspective here is an antithesis of the whole movement of the world. But it is a reality that we must wrestle up, especially when we are young, looking into the future. And he's talking about the future here. And he's warning each one of us that it is coming, and it is well for us to just go into the description here. It's kind of funny. It's kind of off the cuff a little bit. But it builds together a picture of reality for us. So he said that before the evil days come and the years draw near when you will say, I have no delight in them. And so he said that the days are evil, with trouble and pain that will come, and you will say as those who come before you that you have no delight in this life, no delight in these days. Remember, we are talking about life in the level of human existence, in the here and now, in society, in the work, in family, in career. Without God, until we are convinced of this, we're not going to see that we need God so much. So he talked about a time when it's evil, and then he began to describe the process. And he takes a lot of words to do that, but just follow with me. So you have the text there, just follow with me. First, he's talking about mental dullness and depression. And the big sign, it will come first, or it may come later, but it will come, and that is mental dullness and depression. He said that the evil day will come when I have no delight in them, before the sun and the light and the moon and the stars are darkened and the clouds return after the rain. Now, he's talking about the time passing by and the aging result. Sun and the light, moon and the stars darkened. Something very sad in this picture. Clouds return after the rain. Now, usually the sky is clear after the rain. We think that, you know, after the rain, you see a clear sky. But the picture Solomon is painting here is that the sky is not clear after the rain. The rain ends, but the sky does not clear. Instead, another clouds will come, and then another. It is a gloomy picture. So the cloud may be speaking of many, many things, but keeping together with the description he has here, he's talking about the deterioration of the mind, of the outlook to life. The mind is getting dark, it's beginning to get dull. There's nothing bright, nothing in the future. And then he take on the physical body and he look at different things for us to have the right feeling. He said that in the day that the watchmen of the house tremble and mighty men stoop and the grinding ones stand idle because they are few. And those who look through the windows grow dim. When you read that fast, actually you don't know what he's talking about. But he's talking about, you know, the watchman, the strong part of the body, the fighter, the protectors. You know, he may be talking about the hands that are now begin to tremble. Something is happening before you are all strong. It is a watchman. It is something that you raise your life by your own hands, so to speak. And now they are tremble. And then the mighty man, the legs now stoop. The house is built on pillows. You know, the strong portion. But now it's no longer can stand straight. I remember when Lam and Lin were a little small, we go out and play basketball. And I can take on both of them. But now I can't even run, you know, a few steps without taking old man break. You just can't handle that anymore. And then he said, you know, your teeth are falling off. The grinding ones stand idle because they are few. Well, what is that, you know? Your teeth now are few because they're falling off and you can't grind things no more. You can't chew on that. You can't eat corn on the cob. So you have problems. And then your eyes grow dim. You know, the eyes go. He said those who look through windows grow dim. Now, you know, you look out the window, you can't see anything anymore. And so, you know, first you have a pair of glasses, and then you have contact lens, and then you have LASIK, and all these things, bifocal, and then big dog and the white cane. Again, you know, come to the point, windows will be all fogged up. Laugh now if you want, teenagers, but someday your eyes will be so dim you can't even find your false teeth. Just for us to understand, you know, we don't think about these things. But he is bringing it to our life is very short, and it's going out the window. He's talking about the hearing. And soon the doors on the street are shut as sound of the grinding mill is low. And one will arise at the sound of the bird and all the daughters of song will sing softly. He said, you know, now the favorite word that you have is, huh? You know, anybody say anything to you, you say, huh? I find myself doing that all the time now because I just can't hear no more. Especially the first three words. If you just come and talk to me, you know, take me a little bit to readjust. Because your ears, your hearing will go, and everything sounds like a quiet hum of the grinding mill. We know something is there, that somebody is speaking to us, but he said the sound of the grinding mill is low. At the end of time, I see my kids laughing and say, what you guys mumbling about? Everybody can hear except you. So we see that's coming. And you can't sleep. One thing about older people is that they sleep less, and so they work up here. So one will arise at the sound of the bird, that you get up early, you can't sleep anymore, and then your voice will go also. All the daughter's song will sing soft. You can't carry a tune anymore. You used to be a singer, maybe you used to be in the vocal team of in worship. Now you can't hit the high note, you can't carry the low note, you're just somewhere humming in the middle. And then he talked more about the whole mentality of that. Furthermore, men are afraid of high place and terrors on the road. You've seen old people driving, the road warrior driving, you know, 30 miles per hour in the carpool lane. Next time when you follow in behind them, don't get so frustrated. It could be you in a few years. And then he said, the almond tree blossoms. What is that? It's that your hair now turning white. And it's very interesting, you know, we started this church in 86 and a lot of us were young. We still have hair and we still have black hair. But now those people who are with me from the beginning, we are turning gray. We're turning more gray. And we just look at the process here. And he said, just watch that because it's indicative of life. And then he said, the grasshopper's tracks, you know, you used to have just energy, you know, like grasshopper jumping everywhere. But now guess what? The grasshopper can't even jump. It just drag himself go. Even they don't let you go to play sport after 35 because they think that you are a grasshopper now, drag themselves along. And then also he said the cupperberry is ineffective. It's really sour stuff. You know, it's wake you up. But now even those stimuli don't work for you anymore because you're no longer sensitive to these things. And then death comes. It's a brutal picture, but it is a picture that we must grasp because young people, he said, you don't think like this. You don't even believe this. But believe it or not, it's coming. It is the fate of life for each and everyone, and you better think it through. Because you make decision, if you don't understand life like this, then your decision will be all wrong. And then he said, for man goes to his eternal home while mourners go about in the street. And then he gave the picture of death that is as brutal as it can be. Even though he used poetic language, we understand what he's saying. Remember him, we'll come back to that. Before the silver cord is broken and the golden bowl is crushed and the pitcher by the well is shattered, and the wheel at the cistern is crushed. Then dust will return to earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. We will all die. You know, nothing here is very unclear. The silver cord will be broken, golden bowl will be shattered, pitcher will be crushed, and the wheel will be broken. Dust will return to earth, and spirit return to God. So now, at the end, what's the evaluation? If life is lived out in the horizontal, if it's just carried out in as a human existence in all the pursuit of life, and we will see in a minute, all the riches and knowledge and all these things will add up to the conclusion. The conclusion is in verse 8. Vanity of vanities, said the preacher, all is vanity. So the evaluation is a sad picture. It is not all, because we will come to the other side, but it starts here and it begins here that we understand life is all vanity of vanities. All is vanity. It is empty. It is nothing. It is vain. It is futile. We don't measure life like this. You don't, you know, motivation speakers come up and say, life is vain, you know. Life is nothing. Your pursuit will end up to be zero. But listen, if you have one life to live, and it is a very short life, and you will soon run out of time, it will end whether you like it or not. It will deteriorate. You will not live forever. You will not fly. You will not make it to heaven on the horizontal existence of man. We are human and we will die, and we have one life, one chance on this earth. Now, what are we going to do with that life? How are we going to make out that life? How do we make it count? Because if you do not do it right, if you do not understand this picture and what God is telling us, our life will add up to be one thing, one big fat zero. It's all vanity. So now we begin to have to put all our dreams and all our hopes and all our pursuit in this scale of things. Especially, he said, now young people, you need to understand this. And so let me just do a quick survey through the book with you, you know, a few minutes, so that you can see the gravity of the book is about. Because God allows Solomon to do this survey for us. He allows Solomon to live a life free to do whatever he wants to do, try everything, experience everything, and then record for us the lesson. Kind of go into that. God knows it. We don't believe it. He said, I'll send this man, the smartest man. I endow him with the wisdom like no man before, and he will record for us what the value of each and everything. So if you have the Bible, it's helpful if you flip with me, keep you awake, and keep us together. We will start out with the thesis in Ecclesiastes verse 1 to 2. The word of the preacher, the son of David, king of Jerusalem, vanity of vanities, said the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. So start out with that and it conclude with that. And that is the basic thesis. Meaningless, meaningless, utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. Wonderful thing to go to Sunday morning and hear that's what the Bible says. Our life is totally, utterly meaningless. Now, do you believe that? Outside of God, it is so. We'll come to that. But number one, he said there is futility in history. Nobody will remember you. Nobody will remember us. Nobody will remember your name. If they do, you make no difference to them. Verse 11, there is no remembrance of early things, and also the later things will occur. There will be for them no remembrance among those who will come later still. I mean, it's history, it's day, you know, we may remember, but make no difference. Number two, he said there's a futility of human wisdom. The wisdom of man does not make a difference at the end. All the learning, all the things that we pursue, verse 18, because in much wisdom there is much grief, and increased knowledge result in increasing pain. He said, wisdom doesn't change anything. You can learn all that you want. Chapter 2, verse 14 to 16. The wise man's eye are in his head, but the fool's walks in darkness, and yet I know that one fate befalls them both. Then I said to myself, all is the fate, as is the fate of the fool, it is also before me. Why then have I been extremely wise? So I said to myself, this too is vanity, for there is no lasting remembrance of the wise man as with the fool. Inasmuch as in the coming day all will be forgotten, and how the wise man and the fool alike die. You know, you can pursue PhD and you may have walked proudly upon the earth and feel that you are above the fools. And he said, no, you all die the same way and all will be forgotten. Futility of success and pleasure. You know, Solomon guy, he tried everything. He tried vacation, it didn't work. He tried comedy club, you know, he went to Vegas show, he joined into a stupid comedy, and then he tried to fix his homes, he tried to remodel, you know, not the kind of fix-up that we do. His garden is the whole parks and the whole plantation, but nothing came out of that. Servants, cars, and best property in Jerusalem, nothing came about. How about wife? You know, he said, no, one wife, probably not enough, so he tries 700. More trouble, more pain. Verse 11, chapter 2. This I consider all my activities, which my hand has done, and the labor which I have exerted. And behold, all was vanity and striving after the wind, and there was no profit under the sun. Well, not that we go home and, you know, curb in bed. Well, that's what we for sure vanity. But he's talking to us here. We embracing all this and, you know, do this and so that you have vacation. You can go here and go there and enjoy. He said, and then what? And then what afterwards? It's all vanity. Futility of labor. You know, we work. But then, you know, he said something very interesting. Chapter 2, verse 21, 23. There's a man who has labor with wisdom, knowledge, and skill. Then he give his legacy to one who has not labor with them. This too is vanity and a great evil. For what does a man get in all his labor and in his striving with which he labors under the sun? Because all his days his task is painful and grievous. Even at night his mind does not rest. This too is vanity. He said, you know, you can work and all you got is pain. What do you have for? Futility of riches. You like money? I always like money. Being rich is better than being poor, they say. Everybody has problems, but the problems of the rich are easier to handle than the problems of the right, of the poor. You know, Ted Turner, you remember him, he once said, you only need $200 million to live on. $50 million for the house, $100 million for spending, $50 million for rainy days, and then the rest will be irrelevant. If you have more than $200 million, well, our numbers may be a lot less. In chapter 5, verse 11 to 6, tell us this. When good things increase, those who consume them increase. So what is the advantage of their owners except to look on? The sleep of the working man is pleasant whether he eats little or much, but the full stomach of the rich man does not allow him to sleep. Meaning, you know, riches doesn't do anything. He go on and on like that, and we begin to realize that as you look into each and every part of life, say even long life, you want to live forever, you want to live a long life, what if you live 1,000 years and have 100 of children? You know, would that be cool? He said, no, because once you're gone, you're gone. It doesn't matter how long you live. You cannot affect events and decisions after you're gone. Chapter 6, let's just read from 3. If a man fathers 100 children and lives many years, however many they be, but his soul is not satisfied with good things and he does not even have a proper burial, then I say better the miscarriage than he. For it comes in futility and goes into obscurity, and its name is covered in obscurity. You know, this relentless, inescapable obscurity of life. How about being good? Trying to be good. Futility of morality, he said. What if you're just trying to be good, you know, live a moral life and make us a difference, save the whales, and make the world a better place to live? But, you know, if that is all we do, then we are just arranging deck chairs on the Titanic as it is sinking. Let's look at chapter 7, verse 15. I have seen everything during my lifetime of futility. There is a righteous man who perishes in his righteousness, and there is a wicked man who prolongs his life in his wickedness. Do not be excessively righteous and do not be overly wise. Why would you ruin yourself? You know, strange questions come from the Bible. And again, this term righteousness, that means that the righteousness in God. It just say, you are a better man if you do good, if you are a moral man. So what's the difference? You know, you die, the wicked man die. Because at the end, everybody is measured the same way. One life, all dies. It is inevitable. Death will come to all. And the life, what to eat, what to wear, what to drink, all is comfort, all is ease, all is success, will be measured up to nothing. Nobody is invincible. Nobody can cheat death. Nobody can escape this result. So here's the first picture that we ought to understand, because, like I said, I'm afraid that we don't buy into this talk at all. We hear it, but if left to us, we still can pursue all these things and say, you know, rather these things are nothing, but turn out to be they are all nothing. So understanding of the futility of life without God. Don't just blindly live, or you will live blind. What values are we pursuing? What values do we pass on? What values are we communicating to our friends? You know, death and time will wipe all away except in the Lord. We'll get to that. But what is our duty then? We have to understand this. If we have not grasped this, the Bible calls us to spend the whole book so that we understand this one point. All is vanity outside the Lord. And in here in chapter 12, he particularly talking to this audience. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth. You need to be thinking about this. Otherwise, you're going to waste the whole life, your whole future. So one thing we must know, that is vanity outside the Lord. All here and now will be gone. And God must be everything to make things eternal. Meaning, purpose, worthiness, value, only in the Lord. Only in the Lord. So let me move quickly to that point. And that is point number 2, that now if we bring a life with God, Then what does that mean? So number two, remember God's blessing, the present. So what do we do? How do we face this life when it's all, you know, all futility? Well, Ecclesiastes tells us to do two things. Number one, we must remember God. And number two, after remembering God, we enjoy His blessing. It's a very simple thing, you know, so simple. You say, you know, you should have figured this out. But it's very profound in another way. The emphasis here is the relationship with God. It is not in the things we do, it's not in the future, it's not in the activities. He said, the only one thing that makes a difference is our relationship with God. And once that happened, then it opened up the gate door to maximum use of all the opportunities and blessing God given into your hand. And live fully, live joyously, live, you know, to the max. Because when you remember God and remember His blessing in the present, you live according to Him. So let me to put it another way, is that we put God in the center and then enjoy it. So that's how life is. Put God in the center and then enjoy the life, even it is here and now. Look at chapter 11, just look up in a couple of verses up there, verse 9 and 10. Again, young people, he said, rejoice, young man, during your childhood, and let your heart be pleasant during the days of your young manhood, and follow the impulses of your heart and the desires of your eyes. Yet know that God will bring you to judgment for all these sins. So remove grief and anger from your heart and put away pain from your body, because childhood and prime of life are fleeting. He said, you know, live life fully, go out there, but always, always remember that God is there and live life in consideration of Him. Now the ancient Hebrew terms that we translate remember here means to act decisively on behalf of someone. So when we say remember, we don't just say, you know, don't forget this, but we are called to act decisively on that person's behalf. So we say, you know, remember God, meaning to act decisively on God's behalf in our life. And the Old Testament used this word often, not to remind us, don't forget things, like, you know, the yellow post-it notes, and then we write, remember God today. But it is the word to call us to act on God's behalf. For example, you know, when Rachel, Jacob's wife, was with our child, and she cried out to the Lord, and the Bible said God remembers her, doesn't mean that He has forgotten her, and now just suddenly she prayed, and then, oh, Rachel, you know, I forgot you. But when He remembers Rachel, He acts on her behalf, and she conceived and bare children. And that's what happened to Anna and other women. And when God remembers us to forgive, remember us to save, remember us to rescue, meaning He acts on our behalf when we cry to Him. Egypt, for example, God is said to remember His people when they cry out to Him. He has committed to a covenant relationship with them, and He said, in 400 years, I'll take you out of Egypt. And then at the time, He remembers His people, meaning, has He forgotten them? No. He said, at that time, He acts on their behalf. He acts on their behalf decisively and make His promise happen. So here is the call. It's not just, you know, go through life and, you know, once in a while remember God, thinking of Him. No, we are told to remember the Lord in a way that we live with active decision concerning God. We will decide always that if God is near, which He is, and always consistent with Him for His sake, for His glory. So we are talking about a life centered on God, and we live unto God, that we make decisions because of God. Facing the futility of life, the only reason, the only way we can live, is live that life centered on God, and live decisively with Him in every aspect of our life. Because without Him, everything is futile, and with Him and for Him, everything makes sense. So again, very simple premise of life. Without God, everything is futile. Doesn't matter what you do. You can pursue career, family, whatever. You may feel good, you may feel bad, you may happy, whatever. It all ends up big fat zero at the end. Vanity of all vanity. But with God, then simple things make sense. Simple thing is eternal. And so it means that we listen to God and act accordingly. It means we will not follow the dictates of our own heart, but we will follow the dictates of His truth. It means that we will make intelligent and serious study of His word, and to learn of His will, and to know how to walk in obedience to Him. And the Bible is urgent here. He said, you know, young men, young women, do it now. You know, do it now before the evil days come. You must put this into practice. You must live on this principle, or guarantee everything you do from now on out will be evil, and everything will go away. If we have children, We have to teach them when they're young and when they're still reachable and still teachable. Because there will be time in our relationship with our children, the teaching will be no more effective. They will be on their own, and whatever they have received over the years, they will live with it. And if they have not received this truth, because we have not ourselves believe it and ourselves live it out, then we have to be careful. We may teach them, you know, be there, be successful, you know, get straight A, yes. You know, go to good school and get to a good career, yes. And, you know, be a doctor and engineer and make tons of money and, yes, serve the Lord and do all this. And, but if we don't tell them and if they don't believe that it is all futile, it's all vanity, unless they act decisively for God and for His sake, then we have not taught our children, and they have not learned. So we have to live life in the vertical. We have to break out of the horizontal norm of living in the world. And I'm telling you, that norm is rigid. That norm is powerful. It grips you, it molds you, it changes you. And that's why Paul said, you know, don't let the world mold you into, you know, fit you into its mold. You got to fight. You got to think differently. You got to renew your mind in God's truth. But once you do that, then you can live the life in the present with our feet on the ground on this earth. With all the limitations of life and time and body, we still grow old, we're still human. But now we live in a connection to God, decisively on God's behalf. And therefore our life will be worth a living. Now going back to the same book now, and he's coming back to the same theme. And then he now adds God into it. He adds God into the things that he just declared previously, there's all nothing. And now we will see that with God, they're totally different things here. You know, Jesus said that, and we know he said, outside of me, you can do nothing in John 15:5. Paul uses a different language, but the same premise. He said in Romans 14:23, everything that does not come from faith is sin. So the bottom line here is that we must live for God and must live in faith. But now we live in the shortness of time, in the things that's so fleeting in our life, but with God and enjoy God. So from vanity to joy and blessing, from futility to purpose and focus and enjoyment. We do the same thing in life. We still go to school. We still get career. We still get married and we still raise kids. But now instead of for yourself, you do that decisively on God's behalf and for His agenda, then it is totally different. Let's go back to chapter 2 and look at verse 24. He's talking about labor now. He just said, you know, you work hard and it means nothing. But now he come back and said, but if you add God to that, everything means totally different. There is nothing better for a man than to eat and drink and tell himself that his labor is good. This also I have seen that is from the hand of God. For who can eat and who can have enjoyment without him? That's an awesome question, isn't it? Now, we say, I'll eat fine, I enjoy life fine. But no, you do so without him, without decisively acting on his behalf in that relationship, is all vanity. For a person who is good in his sight, he has given wisdom and knowledge and joy, while to the sinner he has given the task of gathering and collecting so that he may give to one who is good in God's sight. This too is vanity and striving after the wind. So he said this, look at the comparison. If you live for God in connection to Him and you act decisively for on His behalf, if you remember Him, then He gives you wisdom, which is vanity without Him. He gives you knowledge, which is vanity without Him. He gives you joy. And look at the sinner who don't have this connection. What they do? They go out and gather and collect so that somebody else may use it. And he said, look, you know, very simple life. Your labor makes a whole difference only when you labor decisively on God's behalf. Meaning you still go do the labor, but now it's no longer for you. But it's for God and His purpose. Then He adds eternity to that. He adds meaning to that. He transforms our life in a way that we cannot do ourselves. See, here is the whole thing. We cannot do anything about meaning of life. We cannot make life meaningful. We cannot make life happy. We cannot add anything to it. We just live the task of each day. He said that if you live the task of each day on the horizontal, it will add up to be nothing, absolutely nothing. You live the same thing, but now you live decisively for God, then it means everything else. You know, such a simple thing, isn't it? But that is where the huge dichotomy in our life. Left to us, we run out and do all things in futility. But he said, you know, when you act decisively to God, walk in His presence, not only He add meaning, He turned everything into eternity. He turned everything into beautiful things. Turn to chapter 3, verse 11, 14. This is familiar because we make a song out of this. But this song is telling us that life is all futile, that you live outside of God, it all mean nothing. And so you sing the song, you better understand what it is. He has made everything appropriate in His time. He has also set eternity in their heart. Yet so man will not find out the work which God has done from the beginning even to the end. I know there is nothing better for them than to rejoice and to do good in one's lifetime. Moreover, that every man who eats and drinks see good in all his labor, it is the gift of God. And he said, I know that everything God does will remain forever. There is nothing to add to it. There is nothing to take from it. For God has so worked that man should fear. Oh, beautiful. Now my life, now your life, going out Monday, doing the things, you know, get up, brush our teeth, and get ready to school, you know, pack lunch for kids, and do all the things that we do. Now suddenly it's all eternal work. Suddenly it's all praise and worship. It's suddenly that it is God work making things that nothing can be added to it, nothing can be taken away. That you go to school and you compete for AP class and you go to college and take this course and get out the career, something eternal is happening. Something marvelous and wonderful God is working out of that. And such a fine line between that eternity and futility. And the Bible is saying, if you don't get it now, you won't get it then. So get it now, young people. Get it in your head that this kind of understanding must come to grip you every decision you make. He said money, you know, we remember what he said about money, right? The more you have, the more pain you have. No advantage except that you know you have it and watch it and watch somebody else use it. But now, same money, what a big difference. Look at chapter 5, 18 to 20. Here, what I have seen to be good and fitting, to eat, to drink, and enjoy oneself in all one's labor in which he toils under the sun during the few years of his life which God has given him. For this is his reward. Furthermore, as for every man who God has given riches and wealth, he also empower him to eat from them and to receive his reward and rejoice in his labor. This is the gift of God. For he will not often consider the years of his life because God keeps him occupied with the gladness of his heart. God keep him occupied with what? With gladness. That's an amazing thing. You know, why are we sometimes labor and find such a drag? You know, sometimes we go to school and we don't know why we labor. He said, those people who live decisively for God have one thing. God will preoccupy their hearts with gladness of God. So we can do anything. We can do mundane things. We can mow the lawn and we can, you know, do things that just stuff of life. And yet it's so different because we act decisively for God. I like that. You know, decisively means you mean it, you purpose it, you understand what you're doing, and you commit to that. Family is the same thing, you know. He said, family, you can have 100 sons, and it means nothing. You die, you're gone, and you have no impact on them. But now he said, add God to that, chapter 9, verse 7 to 9. He said, go then, eat your bread in happiness, and drink your wine with a cheerful heart. For God has already approved your works. Let your clothes be white all the time, and let not oil be lacking on your head. Enjoy life with a woman whom you love all the days of your fleeting life, which God has given to you under the sun. For this is your reward in life, your toil which you have labored under the sun. He said, enjoy life. You know, wear white clothes. You know, be beautiful. Do everything for the enjoyment, for family, relationship, love, everything. Why? God's gift to you. So we wake up tomorrow and we say, this day is God's gift to me. I will act decisively on His behalf. And then you do your own things, and now suddenly everything makes sense. So let me say, if we understand that, then it's such a relaxing thing, a wonderful thing to live. Because there is a very fine line between futility and fulfillment of life, we must understand this. Same short year, same aging process, same trouble, but one is blessed and the other is cursed. And sad indeed if we don't know the difference. So when we know the difference and we say that, relax, you know, have fun. We can tell our children, you know, have fun in your childhood. Don't have to hurry up. You don't have to grow up too fast. Enjoy life. Teenage years, we say, wonderful, you know, you are in the best of years. So many discoveries, so many wonders, so much fun. Enjoy them. College year, what a wonder of adulthood, of independence, of striking out on your own, of following your potential and working hard to achieve your dreams. So go for it. Give it the best shot. You know, aim high. Build the options of your life as long as you act decisively for God. You miss that part in the end, everything you do is zero. It's futility. It's nothing. So that's what he come at the end of chapter 11 and 12. So again, in verse 9 of chapter 11, he said, rejoice, young man, during your childhood. Enjoy it. And let your heart be present. Enjoy the gladness that God has preoccupied your heart with His own during the days of your manhood. Follow the impulses of your heart. It sounds like, you know, you go out and just do whatever you want. I mean, precisely. If you have decided to live for God and act decisively for Him at every turn, go do whatever. Because whatever means you want to act on God's behalf. And so that captured the freedom. We're not in straight jacket. We will not live life so constrained. No, we live life in freedom, but the freedom is the freedom in God. He said, but yet you know God will bring you to judgment of all these sins. God will measure of these sins. So understand that relationship with God. So what do? We live decisively for God. We live in the present. We live not yesterday. Yesterday is gone. Tomorrow's not here. You know, you know that. We only have today. So he said, live today. Live fully today for God. Live in the presence of God. We don't have any other time to enjoy God than today. Remember Him now and remember Him decisively now. So like you sit right here. You sit right at the church. Enjoy now. Act decisively now. Even though, you know, the sermon is overwhelming, like you said. Decided that, you know, I'm going to enjoy it anyhow. It's just like life. It's come and go and I can't handle it. Portion now that I can take it. I'll enjoy it. I will learn from it and I will celebrate it for God. Do your utmost. Enjoy God's blessing. Everything else, He will add eternity to it. He will make everything beautiful in His time. Thirdly, remember the future judgment of God. Just remember that He will measure everything. So I won't say much here. I'll just read the conclusion and we just pause on it. He said the conclusion, chapter 12, verse 13. When all has been heard. Meaning all the things that add up. You know, Solomon went out and experimented every aspect of life. So he recorded everything on the horizontal line. And he said, vanity, vanity, empty, nothing, nothing, nothing. Whatever you try, whatever you put on this line, it ends up nothing. Then he put the vertical and he said, joy, happiness, you know, blessing. Whatever you add into this vertical line, it will be transformed into eternity. It will be beautiful in God's time. And he said, so what's the conclusion? When all has been said and done, all has been heard is this. Fear God and keep His commandments. Because this applies to every person. See what he said? It applies to every person. And then God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or evil. Meaning this rule, this principle, is to be applied to everyone, everything, every act, every day, every moment. You have a choice of futility or eternity. You have the joy of making everything on your own to add up to be nothing, or to act decisively for God. And He will transform everything into beauty, eternal value in His sight. One thing in between, nothing and everything, is that you act decisively for God. If you remember Him in everything you do. That's not hard to remember, right? But we have to do it to really live it out. Let's stand. Well, I invite you to just take one thing you will do tomorrow. Just randomly pick one thing you do tomorrow. And ask the question, will this be nothing or will this be eternal? You will decide that today for tomorrow, whether it be nothing and futile or beautiful and joyous in God's sight. Pick one thing, brushing teeth, going to school, taking tests, eat lunch, however that you pick one. Turn to the next person, share that and pray together. Now close. Lord, we thank You for Your promise that You will make everything in our lives beautiful in Your time. And that You will turn the futility of our life into eternity before You, of song and gladness and enjoyment and fulfillment as we walk decisively before You. So help us, Lord, each and every one, because You say this principle applies to each one of us, each and everything we do, each and every day we live, each and every moment we have in the present day. So we have a choice, Lord, and we thank You that in Your grace You will help us to make the choice for You, to act decisively for You. So we thank You. So help us now, Lord, to live it out. We thank You. We pray in Jesus' name.